ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by David Pollack and Reese Davis.
The gap between the elite and the rest seems bigger than ever. Oklahoma and Texas, it just means more. And a showdown in Iowa City between Penn State and Iowa after we turn the page. This is the ESPN College Football Podcast for Tuesday, October 5th. Reese Davis and David Pollack with you as always on Tuesdays. Thanks for listening there. And David, we were in Athens for College Game Day last Saturday. Arkansas came in. Arkansas is a growing program, and Arkansas is not in the same class as Georgia, and they could play 100 times, and you would have the same result 100 times.
I think Georgia and Alabama this weekend said, hey, guys, there's levels to this bullshit. you ain't there yet. I think we suspected that Georgia could do that to Arkansas, but you know how football is. You can still have crazy tips and stuff like that and crazy turnovers and play bad and still lose a football game. But, a lot of good things to take away from Georgia. I don't think we doubted their defense. We knew they were elite. But offensively, I'm starting to see some better push up front, maybe seeing them run the ball a little bit more. But I think Georgia and Alabama was like, hey, everybody, thanks for coming. Thanks for doubting. There's levels to this.
Well, I'm sure Alabama thanked you for doubting. The Alabama defense thanked you for doubting, I'm sure.
Here's Kiffin forgot to turn the microwave on. I mean, you can't cook popcorn without the microwave on, Lane. Like, oh, man, he was excited. You could tell, bro, from that clip, he was excited. He was ready to have some success. And,
Do you know what happened? Have you ever left popcorn in the microwave for way too long?
Yeah, starts to burn.
It burns, and there is a stench that you can't get out of your nose like for days. You walk through the room and you smell it. That's what Alabama did to Ole Miss. They left that burned popcorn stench that they're not going to get out for a while. Now, they may beat Arkansas, they may do well, but hyping up that game. I love the fact that they just pushed it all to the center of the table and said, here we come. But they weren't ready for it.
Reese Davis was, by the way, just to give full credit where credit is due. Reese Davis was in meetings doing the old reverse psychology all week long. Poor Alabama. Ole Miss is coming. Poor Alabama.
I know it. I was going that brilliant. Lane Kiffin and Jeff Lebby. Oh, Matt Corral. They got no chance at all. Poor old Bryce Young, who, by the way, is the best quarterback in the country. And I know you're going to argue with that. Here's what I came out of from those two games that we saw, David. Georgia, in my judgment, as we sit here right now, is significantly better than Alabama on defense. Alabama's defense is not as porous as I think you suspected, but they're not Georgia, at least in my judgment.
On the flip side,
I don't care if it's in no disrespect. Well, it's funny how people say no disrespect and then say something mildly disrespectful. I don't intend to come across that way. Whether it's JT Daniels or Stetson Bennett or Carson Beck or whoever it is, Alabama's significantly better at quarterback than Georgia. And because that is the most important position on the field, and that is the player who touches the ball every play, that's why I have Alabama ranked number one and Georgia number two. What I would like to do on my AP ballot is put Alabama and Georgia side by side, leave about six spots blank, and then rank the rest of them.
How did you decide the next couple? How did you go after that?
I moved Iowa up, and I didn't have them. I have Iowa three. I have Penn State four. And here's the differentiation for me. Because I teased you about the Alabama Ole Miss thing, I was dead wrong about – I don't know if I thought Maryland would win, but I thought Maryland would give Iowa a major challenge on Friday night. That didn't happen. I thought that was really impressive. I'm higher on Maryland's offense than you are, so I expected them to – and they played okay for a quarter, but the turnovers and the injury to Demas, all of those things made it snowball. But even so, it was clear that Iowa was significantly better than them. I moved them to three.
This week we start with Iowa, I think will be a good barometer. Cause I think what we've seen now with Iowa State is they're okay, but they're not superb. They're kind of Iowa State. They're kind of really good, but they're not great. Penn State's got some great attributes. And so I think Iowa versus an offense that I don't consider elite, but an offense that can, it can definitely beat you, that can find ways to create explosive plays. And obviously Dotson, one of the best wide receivers in all of college football, some serious, serious speed on the outside. Can you get away with zone coverage? You know, can you get away with some of those things? So the best game of the weekend, Iowa, Penn State, and it's not close.
I agree. And so since we're on that subject, let's go ahead and turn the page. That's what we do on Tuesdays on the podcast. Time to start looking forward. You have to use last week a little bit to give yourself some context. But beyond that, it's time to look ahead. And Penn State and Iowa is the top game of the weekend. And I've seen Iowa in person. I called their game against Iowa State, watched every game they played. I think their defense is legit. It's not Georgia because it's not quite as athletic as Georgia, but they're extraordinarily disciplined. They tackle well. They're ball hawks. Some of them are, you know, fortuitous and maybe not the best offense that allows them to get the turnovers, but they get them nonetheless. What do you see? Because Sean Clifford's improved that up to this point in the season. That's been the issue for him in the past. It's not taking care of the ball. When you watch Iowa tape, what is it that you think gives quarterbacks problems and could at least in theory put Clifford in harm's way, causing turnovers?
So many guys have really good vision on the football and on the quarterback. So many guys take their drops and get their depth on the quarterback, and they're reading the quarterback consistently. So you're not going to get away with ill-timed throws. You're not going to get away with being a second late, 2 seconds late. Like, they see their receiver, they understand formations, they understand what they're trying to get accomplished, and then they're going to read the quarterback and make sure they break on the football. So you just can't make those mistakes. To spin it the other way though, Reese, real quick, I do see big gains from Clifford. I do see more willingness to take the check down, which used to drive me nuts. He's okay. He's less We talk about Bo Nix, and and I've seen some great things from Bo Nix, and I'm happy that he had a great game the other day, and that was awesome to watch. But you've seen Bo Nix for years get happy feet. Clifford's been no different. He's get happy feet, and he wants to get out of there. Now he's more willing to scramble a little bit, buy a little bit of time, check the football down. Buy a little bit of time, throw the football. So I think that gives them a chance because nobody doubts whether Penn State has playmakers. That gives them another first down and another opportunity to get the ball to some of those big-time playmakers. And I've loved that part of his game that I think has grown. This will be by far his biggest challenge. They thrived in the Auburn game against Auburn, and they did a really good job of making Auburn create busts. Iowa's not going to bust. They're not going to consistently make mistakes. You can formation them to death. You can shift and motion them to death. A couple guys are going to move, and they're going to play ball. They're not going to have six guys moving and you going all over the place. They're going to make you earn everything. We're going to find out if Clifford truly is going to be patient, if Clifford is going to take what they give him, if they can run the football consistently. And a tremendous challenge against two really good football teams.
Well, Penn State has, whatever you think of Auburn's defense, I think it's solid. Penn State had explosive plays against a really good Wisconsin defense. Wisconsin is half a team good. I mean, their defense is
elite. It's elite.
And, you know, the offense is hampering them, obviously, from being good. But Penn State certainly didn't move. They didn't move the ball up and down the field on them. But I think I had a stat a week or so ago. I think they, you know, four of their plays, you know, gained like well over 100 yards, 150 yards, something like that. And they had like 90 on the rest of the game, 40 some odd plays, averaging about 2 yards a play. But they created some explosives against Wisconsin. And I think that's going to be the biggest factor for them Saturday. If they're going to go in there and win that game in what will be a crazy environment against a really confident team and perhaps a somewhat improving offense, you know, we'll see, because I think Penn State's, you know, pretty good on defense too. But I think they're going to have to get it in chunks. They're not going to be able to hold the ball forever and march it down the field on 10, 11 play drives.
And I think the difference when I watch tape between Iowa and Wisconsin is Iowa's secondary is a lot more athletic. it's a lot better in the back. Wisconsin is extremely sound, and Wisconsin is way more physical up front. Their front seven, Wisconsin's front seven, they got a bunch of people that don't like people. I mean, they will hit you in the mouth repeatedly. They will come down here. Their physicality makes up, and their strength makes up for a lot of ails that they don't do correctly. They might be out of a gap, but a linebacker comes downhill and he hits you in the mouth and he closes that gap. Like, they do a really good job with that. I think Iowa's more athletic. I think Iowa in the back end can really hold up and make plays, make athletic plays on the ball. Wisconsin, in that game, Reese, the only plays, like when they came out in the second half, Penn State, they spit the ball in the perimeter for eight. They spit the ball in the perimeter for 10. They spit the ball in the perimeter for six. They went bombs away, busted coverage, you know, scored a touchdown. There wasn't a lot of, you know, make you read things, make you play, you know, disciplined football all the way down the field. If they can find a way to create explosives, you're right, it'll do better. But I think you're right. I think Penn State's defense is really, really good. I mean, Porter Jr. is ridiculous. He can shut down half the field. He'll come up and hit you in the mouth, by the way. He'll tackle. He's a football player. So I think that every bit on that other side is, what is Iowa going to be able to do on offense? Because that defense is not as good as Iowa's. I'm not going to say they're as good as Iowa's. They might be a tiny notch below, but Iowa's offense is a struggle bus, and it's very hit or miss. And listen, I think that's what will be fun to watch. Is it's kind of, you know, strength on strength, you know, which team can prevail as far as, you know, defense on defense, the defenses aspect of it.
I think 21 points wins that game.
I agree. 16 won the Wisconsin game.
Right.
What, 16 to 10? I mean, so I'm with you.
Okay. And because of that, you know, it's really funny because I am impressed with Penn State, but when you watch the Big Ten and you realize that Ohio State didn't play its best football in the early part of the season for sure, and there are other tests to come. On paper, Penn State and Iowa could be the first of two meetings. They could play again in the Big Ten championship game. I can't quite get there with Penn State, with Michigan, who, you know, I'm in. I believe Michigan is good, really good. I don't know that I believe that means they're going to beat Ohio State just yet. Let's see how the Buckeyes continue to progress.
Well, are they going to have to beat Nebraska? That's the question.
Well, I will get to that in just a second. What I still think, as we sit here right now, that this game, and we've really made a concerted effort collectively this year not to make everything about the playoff. But Penn State here could win this game. If they could win this game and then play really well against Ohio State, maybe at the end, even if they don't make it to the Big Ten championship game with a win over Auburn, with the win over good Wisconsin. Wisconsin's going to be better by the end of the year, and the record will look a little better. If they win at Iowa, those types of things could help them, you know, if we have this continued chaos. Now, while we're on the subject, and there are bigger games to get to, I'm all in on Michigan. I believe Michigan has vastly improved. I was really impressed this past week against that Wisconsin defense when Michigan didn't think they had to go the George Patton route anymore. They tried Neil Armstrong, and they threw the ball, and they threw it pretty effectively. And I think they're probably better than Nebraska overall. And I am about this close on a Tuesday to saying Nebraska is going to beat Michigan. I think Nebraska's improving.
To be clear, Senator Davis.
Yes, this close.
Because I know you are a people pleaser by nature, by heart.
Well, you wait till later in this podcast. Okay, go ahead.
All in on Michigan. I think they're really good, but they might lose to Nebraska. They're probably not going to beat Ohio State. But I'm all in on Michigan.
What, would 10-2 not be all in on Michigan?
I guess
10-2, 9-3 after what they've done the last few years. Seasons unfold and you react to losses, and, you know, the old players react more when they've, you know, tasted their own blood. I don't think Michigan will lose to Nebraska and Penn State, but they'll probably lose to one of them. And I'm not saying for sure that I'm saying they've got no chance to beat Ohio State. It's just like right now, Ohio State, you know, talent. It's like, you know what? It's like picking Clemson in the ACC, David. Clemson's not playing worth a flip right now. The team that's playing best in the ACC is Pittsburgh. Who do I think is going to win the ACC? Talent. I'll probably come back to Clemson, you know, at least for a little while. I'm sort of that way with Ohio State in the Big Ten. I'm going to come back to talent. They're probably playing a little better right now.
And I don't disagree with that, because the problem is when I start looking at Penn State, and when I start looking, now Michigan might be different. I'm going to put them in a different box. When I start looking at Penn State and I start looking at Iowa, I know Ohio State will score. I know it. I know they have explosive plays in there. And you can tell me all you want about Iowa's defense. You can put Georgia's defense on the field with Ohio State. They're going to score. They're going to score 17 points. They're going to score 21 points. They're going to score 28 points. Like, can you? And that's the biggest question I think that we have with that. Here's the deal. Going back, watching the Michigan game. Wisconsin, you feel more confident because you just told me you feel more confident. We went by air. He threw for less than 200 yards. Most of it, the majority of it was on a flea flicker. We miss, we're late on wheel routes. We don't see RPOs correctly. The passing game for Michigan is a struggle bus. The run game is elite. The run game is great. It feels more Harbaugh-esque. It feels more, I'm going to do this a certain way. It's way more physical. It's way more in your face. It's got more variance than it's used to. The pass game ain't there yet. So they're still very, very one-dimensional, and who's good enough to take them out of that is the question.
They're almost like an option team, because the Service Academy option teams, and I believe Minnesota, are the only teams who have attempted more passes. But the reason I say it's not the attempts, it's the yards per completion. You know, I think it went down a little bit this week because they threw it a few more times, but they've had a lot relative to the number of pass attempts they've had. They've had a lot of explosive pass plays, 50-yard touchdowns, things that had another one Saturday. By the way, do you think they'll use the freshman quarterback more in some of the quarterback run game, McCarthy? I mean, he's their five-star quarterback. He's the highest-rated quarterback in terms of the recruiting rankings that they've signed since they signed Ryan Mallett. How about that? Remember Ryan Mallett?
He didn't work out. Arkansas? Yeah, he didn't work out well either.
Big arm, though.
I think it was
a long time. I wasn't comparing him to Ryan Mallett.
No, I'm just saying, but also one of those explosive passing plays was him. And yeah, I also think he can throw the ball, and I think he has an elite arm. McNamara does not have an elite arm. He doesn't.
I don't remember if I said his name. It's JJ McCarthy. I just want to make sure I said.
You did. You said his name.
I couldn't remember.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. You didn't do the Pollock and go, man, that number 55 is really good. In that case, it'd be number nine. That number nine, McCarthy, boy, he's really good. But nine did have a throw that was late, that was really, really nice up the sideline. I'm not convinced that he might end up being the best man for that job. But obviously, right now it's probably about getting in the right run plays, right? That's part of the prop things that we talked about last week was, you know, if there's more to it than there's two or three plays in your headset that you got to decipher according to what defense, and Michigan's doing a great job, obviously, doing that. But not. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to watch. You know, not having Ronnie Bell takes away one of those guys that could do that. So I think they're one-dimensional, but this is a year of there's not a lot of great. There's not really teams that we point to on both sides of the football that are dominant. Everybody's got some kind of weakness that we go, I can poke a little bit of hole in that. Alabama's so much worse than they were a year ago. So is everybody else. So
Everybody else except Georgia. I don't want to take it back to that. I don't think Georgia's worse than it was last year.
And no, that's true.
And look, worse is a relative term because, I mean, how are you going to be as good as Alabama was on offense last year? I mean,
Georgia's defense was really great last year. Alabama's offense was just so good. But you can't do the what-if game because everybody could do that. But you lose two cornerbacks basically to the first round if you're Georgia that leave as underclassmen.
Right.
Yeah. You go, the only thing you can even remotely poke a hole in this defense is the secondary. And if you had one of those two guys, like one of the two, it would be unreal. But, yeah, I mean, I just think there's a lot of That's not an insult. This is a good thing for everybody. It's a great thing that we have a lot of teams that are good, not great, which I also think that's why we're going to have so many upsets throughout the season and why we might be battling at the end of the year a two-loss team. We might be talking about that for the first time ever in the college football playoff.
I agree. And one thing, remember last week when we both spaced on Devontae Wyatt's name?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen anymore.
I told you. It looks.
We were like, yeah.
Looks so yeah. good. Golly, look at that little number 95. Like, he's really good, but he's not
Holy
real big.
Cow. Yeah. Before we get to Georgia and the challenge that they have this week, and I would love to hear some of your Georgia Auburn stories, because I think you were on the field for the fourth down touchdown, David Green. Not on the field, but you were Michael, on defense.
Obviously. Michael Johnson, baby.
Michael Johnson, yeah. David Green. We'll hear some stories there. But Oklahoma, Texas, the game where College Game Day will be.
SEC.
Well, you know that in the scene set, very early in the scene set, that I'm going to say, it just means more. And it means a lot. And, you know, it's really interesting from an historical perspective. These two programs who've had, there is certainly mutual respect. There is also a lot of contempt and disdain. There's a lot of jealousy. There's a lot of looking down the nose at one another, one thinking the other side's snobbish, the other side, one thinking the other side is not as cultured as the original. And now they have to, they join forces. They realize that no matter what their historical contempt might be, that they're better together than apart, and they're going to take their talents elsewhere. And we've read the stories, the stuff that they're getting yelled at from the crowds and the other Big 12 places, that matters not at all. What does matter is how they square off on Saturday, what it means for Sarkisian, and the weird fact that in this Lincoln Riley inventor of offense era, they haven't won a single game against an FBS opponent by more than one possession. Now, I know they probably should have won the Kansas State game Saturday by more than one possession, but they didn't. And, you know, Kansas State had a chance for the onside kick and everything at the end to maybe take a shot. Other than that,
their defense is playing well.
Yeah, their defense is playing well.
Here's the thing with Oklahoma. It's not going to change. By the way, Spencer Rattler balled his brains out. I mean – I think he was 22 of 26, you know, something to that capacity. The offensive line for Oklahoma isn't good, Reese. And it once is an anomaly, twice becomes a trend. It is what it is. They're not pushing people around, okay? It's just not happening. And they're also not protecting Spencer Rattler. He's under a lot of duress, and he's moving in the pocket, and he's making play after play after play. So, you know, we can talk all we want about Spencer Rattler, the weapons, and who's going to do X, Y, and Z. It's not, they're going to have to continue to do what they do. And that's going to have to be, you know, they're going to have to run the ball on the perimeter. They're going to have to throw the ball, get the ball out of his hands quicker. They're going to have to roll the pocket. Like they're just going to have to be that team this year, which is very different. We're used to seeing them be able to dominate games up front and run the ball for 200. I mean, shoot, that Rose Bowl game against Georgia, they ran the ball for 250 plus yards. Like, we can talk about Baker Mayfield if you want to, but they were a running football team, and now they can't run the ball.
And the other thing, you said get the ball out of his hand quicker. They've had no choice. Can I go stat nerd on you for a second here?
Oh, yeah, I love stats. Stat me.
I know it, but you'll like this one. The average time to the first pressure, meaning average amount of time before Spencer Rattler feels pressure this year, is 2.79 seconds. Last year, it was just a smidge under 3. Now you think, well, that's not much. Yes, it is. I mean, that's pretty statistically significant for a quarterback sitting in the pocket. So all of the abuse that's been heaped on Spencer Rattler, largely by his own fans, and I detailed, you know, on College Game Day Saturday, I think
Caleb
some of that is
Williams.
I think part of that is Caleb the whole NIL Williams. Thing, you know, that fans feel comfortable. And we talked about that on the podcast last week. But I think really a better way to look at it is what you said. He balled out Saturday. He's having to compensate for some weaknesses we're not accustomed to seeing at Oklahoma. So now the question for Saturday is, can Texas exploit that against Oklahoma?
And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that like he's going to be QB one for me, because he's not. Like he's not going to be QB one at the next. I think Kiper has him as QB one. I won't say that. I'm not in love with Rattler like that. I want to call it like it is. And he's not afforded the right to stand behind there a lot. Texas has got it going offensively. Texas doesn't have it going defensively. And I'll be very curious to watch if they can do that. Cause you're right. I see the offense doing this and evolving, and I see the offense getting better and better. And obviously Casey Thompson deserves a shoot ton of credit for that. Having Sark for a number of weeks deserves credit for that. But I don't know that their defense is up to par with it's definitely not Oklahoma's level. It's definitely not on Oklahoma's level, but that's going to be curious if they can make Spencer Rattler feel that pressure. If they can find ways to get heat on him, if they can find ways to make him feel uncomfortable, because he can still dink and dunk. They can still run their shallow screen that they're going to run three times a game that is going to work, and they're still going to manufacture plays, and they're still going to score points. And then the flip side of that is Oklahoma's defense is really good. I mean, it's really good. I enjoy watching them. They play hard. They stunt and kamikaze and move all over the daggum place. And they're not going to let you get a beat on them. They're athletic up front in the trenches and also still big with some good size. So this will be a good showdown.
Who do you like? I like Oklahoma, I think.
I do too. I still can't get Arkansas beating the crap out of Texas out of my head. It replays in my dome, them just absolutely sticking it to them.
Burn and popcorn stench. Yeah. Can't get it out of your nose.
That just lingers.
I've been the same way with Stanford. I watched, I know it wasn't really a prominent game, but, we're fortunate. We get to watch everything. I watched the Stanford-Kansas State game as it was happening. Didn't go back and watch it. I was watching while it was happening. I was like, this is atrocious. This team's going to win. This team might win three games tops this year. This is awful. Offensively, credit to Kansas State, but it was bad. So I've had a hard time getting the burned popcorn stench out of my nose about Stanford. I think I finally came through on Saturday. Oregon should have won the game, no doubt about it. But Stanford,
I'm not going to make excuses. I'm not going to make excuses. But if I'm sitting at the end of the year and I'm on the committee, and Joe Moorhead, who's one of the greatest minds in college football, he is. I think he calls a unbelievable football game. I think he understands what defenses are trying to do, and he knows how to attack them and does such a great job. Oregon didn't have their offensive coordinator. They didn't have him. He wasn't there, okay? He's got health problems. Like he was not able to be there. And now you're going to a new play. And what did you see out the gates? They struggled like crazy on offense. And they got it together. I'm not making excuses, and we can't do the if, ands, and buts game. But I can tell you this. If I'm at the end of the year and we're debating between a team and that loss is on my resume and it's only one loss, that better be brought up. It better be part of the conversation, because there's a lot of teams in the country, if you take their OC away, they're really going to struggle. Really, really going to struggle. And that's what you did to Oregon this past Saturday.
David, that is exactly why you have a committee. That is the human component of evaluating teams that is not only good, I think it's necessary to do it in the best possible fashion. I mean, people complain about the committee, but they complained about the formula. I do put more credence, just to be candid about it, if a team didn't have its quarterback, or if it were missing, two starting linebackers against a team that ran the ball well or something of that nature. But it should be a factor. But what also should be a factor to me with Oregon is that outside of that Saturday in Columbus where they were outstanding, what other Saturday have they looked like a playoff team? I think Arizona outgained them. I know Arizona ran for like 200 yards on them. Arizona's ungood right now. I mean, they're in transition. They didn't look great against Fresno State, who Fresno lost to Hawaii, because, by the way, let that be a lesson, kids. Do not let the game stay close at the end on the island, or you will not walk out of there with a win. You got to put them away early. because weird things happen if you're on the island.
Just for clarity on the Senator Davis speech, is ungood mean you suck?
Yes, but okay. it's a more PG way of saying it.
Gotcha.
I've got a buddy, David. Ungood. I don't know how he started saying that, but he started saying that ungood, just like
you liked it.
Sort of goofy, and I thought it was kind of amusing. It sort of gets the point across. You know,
so is Bear
ungood? Huh?
Is Bear going to jump off the Fresno bandwagon now? I guess we're not going to have to hear about that anymore. I'm sticking with the flowing locks and Grayson McCall, and I will ride that ship till the wheels fall off. Before the season, during the season, after the season, that team,
you're on them.
They're going to score. And they do, by the way, they have fun. Like that team, they do the skits after the game, and Gene did a great piece last year with the wrestling and all. Dude, if you don't think that matters to players, you are wrong. Fun is such an important component of football. It starts with F. It's the first part of it. It's the most important part of football. It doesn't have to be miserable all the time. You don't have to be a jerk all the time. You can make it fun. And I love how much fun they have while still, I mean, kicking people in the face and scoring 65,000 points a game.
So you're not totally on board with the old Gene Stallings philosophy of the fun's in the winning.
Yeah, do both. It's a lot of fun to win, but I can also have fun on my way to victories, and I can have fun on my way to unfortunate losses sometimes.
But not fun in the aftermath of those. You know what? I think Fresno State's a good team too. I'm still with Cincinnati. Cincinnati's probably they're not as explosive as your Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, but that's a really good team.
I'd love to see that matchup. You think Cincinnati's got a shot with no losses?
Yes, to get in the playoff.
Get in the playoff.
Yeah.
All right. So no loss. Does Notre Dame need to keep winning?
I mean, it would help.
No.
It would definitely help. I mean, if Notre Dame goes on a 6-game losing streak, I mean, that's going to hurt. But I think Cincinnati has probably built enough credibility if they run the table. I understand what people say last year shouldn't matter, and it shouldn't, but there is some credibility built over the years at times. And I understand Georgia had guys out and all of that, but the way they played in the bowl game against Georgia gave them some credibility going in and stopping a 26-game home field winning streak at Notre Dame. Granted, not a Notre Dame team that is the same as a club that made the playoff two of the last 3 years, but still, it's still Notre Dame. It's still a solid team, and they stopped a winning streak in a tough place to play.
All right, one loss, Oregon over undefeated Cincinnati.
Well, it depends on everything else, but
I'm saying if those are your four and your five spots, one loss, Oregon, undefeated.
Who else are 1, 2, 3? Probably. I'm going to tell you, based on the way I've seen Oregon play, and you know I've been on Oregon from the beginning. I would want to watch the way both teams play, how they play the rest of the way, how they win. As we sit here right now, if the choice were today from watching the two teams, if it were undefeated Cincinnati or one loss Oregon, it's easy. I'd take undefeated Cincinnati.
Wow. Well, I mean, I have to keep in mind.
Is Oregon? Oregon has one of the best wins of the season. Yeah. But beyond that, when have they looked like a playoff team?
They haven't.
Beyond
they haven't
that Saturday.
But they're also going to have to run through the next several weeks of the season, and they're going to have to at some point beat really good teams. And Cincinnati's not going to have opportunities to beat really good teams. So I think that'll be the debate.
Who are these really good teams? Not saying they aren't good.
I didn't say really good teams.
Yeah, no, I think you said really good. Who are these really good teams that Oregon's going to have to beat?
I said good teams. I didn't say really good teams.
Okay. So you think they're significantly better than the teams in the American that Cincinnati's going to play? Probably better, but significantly better.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe. Not sure I'm convinced of that. UCLA is. Despite UCLA's loss, UCLA is good. And I'm going to be honest. I don't have Oregon's schedule in front of me. I don't think they have Arizona State in the regular season, do they? I don't think. I don't know. Travis.
They do not.
They do not. I didn't think so, but I didn't have it in front of me for
okay,
sure.
Okay, so I got Oregon's schedule now. I'm pulling it up right
now. You know who's good that they're going to play? Beav.
Who?
Beav.
The Beav,
Oregon State.
The Beav Solace.
Jonathan Smith is doing a really good job in Corvallis. Really good job.
So they play UCLA.
good, really good team.
I think Cal this week.
No, UCLA, ungood team.
Colorado. Team.
Ungood team.
Washington.
Ungood.
Washington State.
Ungood.
Utah.
Almost ungood.
Yeah. How about, does that make it just good?
I think they're okay. Good. They're okay.
And then your Beavers.
Solid team.
And then you finish. And then you would finish the season with Arizona State.
With Arizona State, or yeah, probably Arizona State.
Who at that point, depending on how they do, will be ranked. But yeah,
yeah, you're right. And Arizona State's a good team. That's a good team. Okay, so you've gone through that. So now you've got Cincinnati in front of me. We're going to play the game with Cincinnati.
You got Cincinnati schedule, or am I doing this?
No, you do it. Because you want to know.
All right. Cincinnati, they've already beat Indiana. That's a quality win. They beat Notre
Dame.
Solid
win. Yeah, right. Now we don't know.
All right, so here you go. Temple.
Ungood.
UCF.
Good, but not as good without Dylan Gabriel.
I about to say. Navy. Ungood. They're
better,
1-3.
But they came back and won. Well, that's what you never know. You never know. But right now, ungood might get to okay.
So politician Davis just said 1-3 team is ungood, but might get to good. Okay. All right. Tulane.
Ungood.
Mm-hmm. Tulsa.
Pains me to say that, but
Tulsa.
Okay. They're okay.
They're 1-4.
Yeah, but they probably should have won. The Oklahoma State game.
Protecting that. I got one for you if you actually would play this along correctly and say that they suck, because there's a lot of sucks right here in a row. And I'm giving you an opportunity to say it. So.
All right, go.
All right, South Florida.
Inhale briskly.
Mm-hmm. SMU.
That's a more polite way of saying it. SMU.
SMU.
Good.
Smooth.
Former Oklahoma quarterback. Tanner Mordecai's thrown 500 touchdown passes already. Good team.
ECU.
Hey, let me ask you this. Who's better that is on the schedule? Okay, no, you're going to say UCLA. Okay, UCLA's better than SMU. They're better than SMU. But – outside of that, okay, keep going.
Well, that was it, basically.
Is that it? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, so, I don't think about championship game. They have ECU to finish, East Carolina to finish. Yeah. East Carolina's decent. They're not bad. They should be 4-1. They should have beat South Carolina. So, whatever. and then you'll play the standings. Remember, the 1-2 will play Houston right now is undefeated at the top. So,
yeah. But Houston got blasted by Texas Tech. I'm not sure what to make of them just yet either. So, but anyway, I think that proves my point. It's not significantly better. Okay. It's not good enough to overcome an undefeated record unless Cincinnati goes through all of those games that you mentioned against the ungood teams and wins 16-13, have a ball bounce off a tuba to win a game that they should have lost. If that happens, that changes. But if they win the games and take care of business.
So far, what we've seen from the committee in the past several years, this is how I see it. I'm wondering if this is how you see it. In the past several years, what I've seen from the committee is a bad loss stings you more than a good win.
Seems like it.
And I think Oregon losing to Stanford might end up being a bad loss. They have a great win with Ohio State. I think Ohio State will stay ranked up there. And they're going to have more quality wins probably overall top to bottom than Cincinnati. But that albatross, it will drag you down. Ask Ohio State, ask several teams throughout this process. It has been a deal breaker.
It's been a deal breaker for Ohio State because they got blown out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got drilled. And by the end of the season, I'm not so sure that the Stanford loss is going to be a bad loss. The way they're playing right now, and it's an overtime, and the extenuating circumstances you mentioned.
It took two personal fouls in the last drive. By the way, let's just throw this out. I need to say this too because
go ahead.
Not much else. Game day was at Oregon years ago. Mario Cristobal, Oregon versus Stanford. Ball game's over if they just take a knee. They run the ball, fumble the ball. Stanford picks it up, goes in, and scores to win the game. Third down last week. The game is almost – it would not have been run out of time. You pass the ball when you're already in plus territory. So you're already going to have the opportunity to pin them deep. You don't need more yards. Throw the ball on 3rd and 13. Stop the clock. They score with – you're giving it back to an unexplosive
ball. Untimed down.
They score an untimed down on the last play of the game. Again, that is bad coaching. I cannot put that on anybody besides Cristobal. We have to understand the situations of the game. Sure, roll your quarterback. Hey, QB, if it's not there, eat it. Get down on the ground, run the clock. That's 40-plus seconds that's going to run off the clock that gets me closer to winning. They pin him at the one, two personal fouls. Thibodeau gets ejected. And it, all the crap hits the fan. But, again, you could have done a better job of making that harder.
Right. And time management's always on the head coach. But in that case, that's another example of Moorhead not being there, right? Maybe he mitigates that mistake.
Doesn't call a pass play with a minute and change left when the team's basically out of timeouts.
You know, and you remember the stat I brought up on game day Saturday that Rod Gilmore, buddy Rod Gilmore, shared with me going into the Stanford game? Going into that game, Cristobal, 7-6 in road conference games, 5 of the losses to unranked opponents. If my memory's serving correctly from Saturday, now he's 500 with 6 of the losses to unranked opponents. I mean,
I
really like what Mario's doing and has done up there, but there are a couple of Achilles heels, and you've mentioned a couple of them, and getting your team ready to play against teams you ought to beat on the road. If you are that, if you are just average and if you're just in the mix, well, these things are going to happen. You've got to win the, you can't be that 500 on the road.
Do we also reevaluate too? Justin Herbert is a stud.
Yeah, he is.
He's an absolute superstar that you're not getting past 3 in the NFL of guys that are young guys. Obviously, Mahomes is always number one, and Josh Allen's going to be up there. But Justin Herbert's next on that list, if not 2 or 3 on that list of, this dude is an absolute freak show. Big, strong, can run, throwing the ball up where his big receivers can make plays consistently. Where was that? We didn't see that either in college.
That's right. You know what? I want to give Desmond some credit, because when we were at Oregon, Desmond said he thought he wasn't the number one pick in the draft. You could make the argument that he certainly could have been with the way he's played in the NFL. Desmond was on that, and I didn't see it. Not because you didn't see his skill set. You might have been standing with me on the sidelines and warmups at that Stanford game you referenced a couple of years ago.
Oh, he was spinning beans.
You could hear the ball. I mean, which is the only other guy I've ever watched from field level throw the ball where I could hear it and it sounded like that was Brett Favre. I mean, Herbert was spinning it. Yet, I mean, there were so many misses at Oregon. I mean, dirt balls and airmail and interceptions. And you don't see that anymore.
If he had Moorhead, it might be different. I do think Moorhead's changed it a little bit and made it better. But all things to consider when we start doing this down the stretch.
Okay, let's go to Auburn, Georgia. And before that, are you ready for story time with Uncle Reese?
Yeah.
Jordan-Hare. This is not Auburn, Georgia, but it's in Jordan-Hare. And I just thought of it right now.
Can you say it correctly, please? It's Jordan-Hare.
Jordan-Hare. And I fight with this with some of our producers and staff who aren't from the region, who say it's Jordan. I was like, the man's name was Shug Jordan. He gets to pronounce his name however he wants to pronounce it. It's Jordan-Hare. Anyway, I'm in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Brett Favre and Southern Mississippi are in there, and it's homecoming. And it's a low-scoring game, and I think Auburn has, a 12-6 lead maybe, and here comes Favre, leading him down the field. And there's a fourth down play, third or fourth down. They're close to the red zone, and a receiver is running right in front of me, and he sort of inexplicably stops and turns around, and the ball pierces him between his shoulder pads. He catches it and spins into the end zone, game-winning touchdown. I'm working local television at the time. We put the camera in the face and, the receiver after the game, and I said, tell me about the winning play, or whatever I said. And he said, I heard it, so I caught it and had to get in the end zone. And I said, you heard an audible? And he said, no, I heard the ball coming, so I knew Brett had thrown it, so I thought I'd better turn around and catch it. And I was standing there, I heard the ball coming too, but I had no idea. Favre just threw it, and it was whistling through a din, a cauldron of noise in Jordan-Hare. And he spun around, caught it, and won the game.
That's
maybe,
pretty awesome.
Maybe Herbert's like that. Yeah, it was pretty
cool. That's pretty outstanding story. I like that.
It was good. So yeah, you probably have a decent story from the Deep South's oldest rivalry, Auburn and Georgia, which will renew this weekend.
Man, we were getting kicked in the face in
that year where we came back and won. Rodney Brown had like 100 yards plus yards rushing in the first half, and he was destroying us. Cadillac was out hurt. We thought it was a good thing. And then all of a sudden, this guy named Rodney Brown starts toting rock and eating us up. And then we got four straight three and outs and somehow came back from 21 down. And then it was fourth and 16 in 02. We hadn't been to the SEC championship game in 30 years at Georgia. And fourth and 16, jump ball, Michael Johnson catches it in the back of the end zone. Boom, we go to the SEC championship game. And honestly, that was kind of the – like if you talk to – you know, Coach Rick and Kirby and those guys, they'll tell you that was the start of bringing what Georgia has become today. I mean, the belief, the winning, the tradition, the recruiting, all that stuff started to skyrocket, you know, through the roof from that point on.
I mean, there's so many great moments in the history of this rivalry. The prayer at Jordan-Hare with, you know, Nick Marshall, who used to play at Georgia and then was the Auburn quarterback, and, you know, heaved it up on fourth and long, and he scored a touchdown that year that they ended up going to the national championship game, which 2 weeks before the kick six. And, you know, you have that. You have the Munson call back in the 80s before he was born. Look at the sugar falling from the sky, you know, and in the Herschel Bow meeting. And
you got Uga going after a wide receiver and almost biting him.
Robert Baker, who
that was pretty amazing.
Robert Baker ran afoul with some other issues later in life, which you can Google and look up. I don't want to disparage him here, but it certainly made you wonder if there was ulterior motive for Uga going after him other than the fact that he was on the other team. But that was, you know, there are so many great and memorable moments. The question I have about this is, after that just virtuoso performance from Bo Nix on Saturday night against LSU, where, look, man, this dude basically single-handedly won the game for them. You know, a lesser man, would have maybe been crushed, spirit broken, a lesser competitor, just done in by the doubt after the Georgia State benching and the great play by TJ Finley to win that game. And Finley came in Saturday night in Baton Rouge, and then Bo just, he came up there and he looked, you know what he looked at? He looked like he Johnny Manziel meets old school Archie Manning, who, you know, just running all over the place and just making ball plays. It was terrific.
It was awesome. Terrific. And the first one he made was unbelievable. He scrambled three or four times and then throws it with his left hand and gets a completion, which was just silly. But listen, here's the truth of it. Auburn's not great up front of the line. They're not on the offensive line. They're not great at wide receiver. They're really good at running back. They're elite at running back. Bigsby and now Jarquez Hunter, I think, is an animal. He's a freshman. He's special. Shivers is a great third down back. So I actually think they have a really good stable of backs. They're not very good anywhere else. And they need Bo Nix to play like that. They need him to be that guy. But the problem is, you know, Bo's also not that guy that's going to stick his foot in the ground on a three-step drop and throw the ball on time, in rhythm, and move the sticks all the time. So – against Georgia, you're not going to pound them. It's not going to happen. So how are you going to be able to make plays? Bo Nix's running ability is going to be the biggest key of whether Auburn's offense can be successful or not.
Well, Bo Nix would never do what I'm about to suggest, because he is a competitor. He's a warrior, and he bleeds Auburn. But I'm here to tell you that a lesser man would have a look at the film and then have a look at how he's been protected up to this point, and in pregame warmups start reaching for that hammy and saying, "Hey, TJ Finley,
go ahead.
Why don't you have
give
a
it
shot
a whirl, bro.
From in red and black over here?
Let's see scramble around a little bit.
They make a living out of virtually disemboweling quarterbacks. I mean, you know,
hey, KJ Jefferson had a few moments where he ran the football, you know, decently effective, but man, he got popped and he delivered some blows too. But you better be. Did you see that play by Jordan Davis, by the way? I mean,
yes.
I I looked at the wall today when I was over there getting rehab. I'm pretty positive he hit 19.8 on the miles per hour. 19.8. He is 300, depending on whether he had breakfast, he's between 350 and 360 pounds.
Which is a little bit more than the coaching staff at Georgia would prefer.
Way just imagine, more. Way just more than
a little bit less. He might be hitting 20.2.
But my gosh, he gets in the backfield in the game, and the play is to a running back that's probably 4.4, 4.5. And he runs 4 yards outside the tackle box, the runner. So I'm giving you some context. He's outside the tackle box. He's running out wide. Jordan Davis comes from inside out and gets a tackle for a loss. Like that, that's not legal. That's not supposed to happen. I mean, his stats are never going to dominate a football game because he doesn't get that many. But there is no more dominant force in college football than Jordan Davis. Like, he absolutely dominates the game. If a nose guard could win the Heisman, he should be in the discussion. And this year where everything's going to be talked about with it's going to be tough to find guys, what Georgia needs to do is put him in the backfield on a short yarded situations and give him the ball, let him score touchdowns, throw him a pass out of the backfield, find ways to do that. But there is no – I'm just telling you, when you play against Georgia and you play against their defense, the first thing they're going to address – is that big sumbiatch right in the middle of the defense, number 99. And they're going to be like, that dude right there is a problem.
Can you say that on the podcast?
I said son of a biatch.
I know.
Well, I'm pretty sure – I've heard a lot of podcasts, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot worse than that. I do know that.
This is true. Auburn's only chance to beat Georgia is to have that magical night – to have the perfect night. Everything go your way. Because they have to have Bo Nix to be the elite Manziel-esque, Archie Manning-esque guy. Because we all know Bo Nix in his career has been like a ride at a carnival. And not like the meticulously maintained Disney rides. He's been like the traveling tilt-a-whirl where there's a guy everyone calls Pops. He unloads all the pieces of the ride off a flatbed truck and sets it up in a parking lot. And maybe he remembered to tighten all the screws, but the corn dogs at the 7-Eleven smelled really good. So maybe he went over there and got distracted. But when you get on the ride, the sheer speed and you hear these unidentified cracks and pops and there's a clang and your vertebrae is kind of readjusted violently and there's adrenaline and exhilaration and euphoria and you get off and you go, man, why can't every ride be like that? Or maybe the safety bar flies open, you wind up rear end over tea kettle out on the pavement. That's sort of the Bo Nix experience. And I absolutely love him for it because even when there have been moments when he has wound up and Auburn has wound up rear end over tea kettle with their butt all scraped up and needing Neosporin all over the place, he gets right back up. He double birds or double Eli Mannings all the doubters, and he goes right back out there and he tries again. And I'll tell you this, I don't know if they're going to win. In fact, I think they're not going to, but I will guarantee you this, no matter what play happens, no matter what misfortune befalls Auburn on any other play, that dude, if Jordan Davis smashes him and throws him like a rag doll that's been covered in hamburger meat, I mean, he will get up and he will stand behind that center and he will be 1,000% convinced that this is a play that magic happens. And that's why Bo Nix, that's why he has my undying respect, because it might go awful, but he believes the next play it's going to go great. And I love that.
He does. I wish you just gave him love for 30 minutes with that beautiful soliloquy. So I'm going to take the other side of this. Like I just,
well, I also said the safety bar might fly off the carnival. Correct. You might wind up on the pavement. You
know? I know how much he loves Auburn and I know how much he cares and I love how hard he plays. I wish he would focus on the small little details more that would make him a great player, because it's not arm strength. It's not mobility. It's not smarts. It's Can I play within myself and keep myself calm? Can I go through my progressions? Can I play on time? Can I play in rhythm? Like, those are things that I feel like are easier to control than the other things. It's hard to make those. Very few people can make those plays that you're talking about. Like, those are just, those are superhuman plays. I just want to see him get his footwork right and those kind of things. And if he can do that, he could be a good quarterback. He could be a really good quarterback. But, you know, Bobo versus Kirby will be fun. That's always, you know, good friends. That'll always be fun to watch. How do you think Harsin's done, by the way? What do you grade Harsin so far?
B plus, something like that. I think
so know, promising future. You feel like he could get this going? And
I don't know. It's all about whether he can fit into the area and understand the SEC and recruit and all of those things. I think Brian's proven, and you and I've known him for a long time, calling Thursday night games, you know, at Boise State and so forth. He even before he went to Texas as the assistant. I think he's a really good coach. I don't think there's any question about that. But unless you're, we've talked about this a few times, unless you're ultra elite, fit matters. And, you know, that remains to be seen whether that will work. But I do think he's a good coach, and I'd say probably B plus right now. I actually grade him up for taking Bo out of the game against Georgia State. I thought that was especially given the fact that I'm sure he's trying to win over people. And I know the fans were upset, but there are a lot of power brokers there that, you know, I mean, Bo Nix, you know, Auburn royalty with his dad and all that kind of stuff. And he was the recruit, you know, when Gus got him and all of that stuff. So, you know, there's pressure there. And I thought he made a bold move to do it. So I'd give him a B plus. And I will say this, as much as I bragged on his perseverance, they've got no chance Saturday. Zero. They're not going to win that game.
They're not, I mean, but it is at home, which is a great.
A ball could always bounce off a tuba, but they're still not.
Elite atmosphere. But I think Georgia's just kind of on a mission to show everybody what's up. And the jury's out on Harsin, and I'll be curious to see how he does, you know, in the future. But I know he can coach, but fit-wise,
recruiting and running the program at Auburn, which is a different kind of animal. It's not just any other job. There are a lot of.
I'm not saying I've heard negative. I'm saying I've heard not all on board yet. I've heard that.
Well, I mean, that's their history, man. I mean, with the exception of just a relatively few coaches here and there, it's been hard to get everybody aligned there for really since Coach Dye left, probably. People will stay aligned for a little while, but the first time things go wrong, you know, it gets sideways. So that'll be a challenge for him. And, we'll see how it goes. Let me ask you this. I got into a bit of a debate. Another radio host had me on a show the other day, and he was saying, well, you know, if Georgia doesn't get JT Daniels back, they've got no chance. I said, I'm not sure. Not with this game. He's talking like long-term. And I said, I don't think I agree with you there. I said, I don't mean this as a dig at JT. I think he's a good quarterback, and Georgia can certainly win with him. I mean, I know they didn't ask Stetson to do a lot on Saturday. Yeah. I think Stetson Bennett's good. I think he is a good college quarterback, and Georgia can win with him.
I think you know where I stand on this.
Think I asked you?
That's true. But listen, I think the mailman delivers. I love Stetson Bennett. I'm not convinced he's not the best option for Georgia to try to win a national championship. Here's what pisses me off, or here's what annoys me. He makes 1 to 3 decisions a game that I'm just going, what in God's green earth are you looking at? Are you seeing? Are you doing? 100%. He will do that. But he brings the element of mobility. And if you watch, it was a great clip on the goal line. I don't know what number clip it was, and it doesn't matter. It was a great clip on the goal line. They ran a pass run option. Okay. Most people don't hear that very often, but so they ran a quick – Bowers, their elite tight end, who's unbelievable, Brock Bowers. He runs a quick out, Reese. And on that quick out, the ball – like, so the lineman blocked, pass blocked for a second, and Stetson now has this choice. Get that out to him right now, boom, zip it, boom, fit it in there, or it's a quarterback draw. And so as he's throwing the ball, linemen are releasing downfield to go block. If it was covered – he had an easy 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 yards easily that he could have gotten. He threw a nice throw on time in rhythm. So I just think it gives you a lot of creativity that you can. And again, we've talked about it. He hits over 20 miles an hour on the GPS. This dude, he's an elite athlete.
And here's the rub. He's not highly recruited. And that's what people look at. People look at him. He's short. I got news for you. JT Daniels ain't 6'6 either. JT Daniels is 6 feet. I mean, Stetson Bennett, because of he's not five-star, he had to go to a smaller school, he's a walk-on. Like, those are when you enter with that credibility, that street cred, or that's your label, that's how people look at you, right, wrong, or indifferent. So I think Georgia could win a national title with Stetson Bennett. I don't have a problem saying that. There's one quarter
lead against Alabama in the third quarter last year. His name's Stetson Bennett. Like, there's one guy that had a chance to make those plays and be in the game with Alabama. So I'm with you on that. And JT's rehabbing, and he's going to continue to rehab. He hadn't been throwing, so I don't know what that means for the future. But I imagine rest, get time. Well, as you're resting and getting time, Stetson Bennett's getting reps, and you're figuring out what he does well.
Yeah. Okay, let's finish up a couple of quick games that we haven't talked about yet. Arkansas, Ole Miss, bitter disappointments, basically put in their place in terms of where they stand among the elite on Saturday. Now they play each other. Who do you have more confidence in bouncing back?
Matt Corral in this game last year threw 6 interceptions.
Right.
It really frustrated him and annoyed him that they dropped 8 guys. It really slowed them down. I think I trust Arkansas. I think I trust the culture and the Sam Pittman and what they're about and who they are and the quarterback run game and KJ Jefferson and the physicality. I think I trust Arkansas more.
So are you picking them?
I have more time to watch tape, but I definitely lean towards picking Arkansas, yes.
Do you? Okay, I lean the other way. Because
too much offense?
I think they've made some adjustments. But I think that's going to be a really entertaining game because I think they'll both come out with a bit of an edge and try.
Well, the good thing is one played Georgia, one played Bama, so the hangover will be real for both sides.
You know, that's a great point because that's a real thing. I remember Tommy Tuberville told me one time when he was at Auburn, and this was when Saban was at LSU, that Auburn and LSU, after they played each other, always took either a while to get going or played poorly the following week because of the toll that it took of playing each other. So Arkansas and Ole Miss experiencing that. What do you make of the LSU-Kentucky game, too, and particularly as how it might – impact Ed Orgeron and his standing at LSU? I think it's a huge game for LSU.
I have zero faith that LSU turns this around. I watch LSU and I get very confused. I don't understand how the team that recruits as well as they do year in and year out can look as bad as they have the last 2 years. A team that won the national title, a team that destroyed every really good team in their way to play great teams time and time again and rose to the occasion and played great. It's just amazing how much a couple years difference makes. And I don't think it's going to end well for Coach O.
That's a tough one. I admire Kentucky figuring out how to win, but that was such a weird win that they had the other night. I mean, I think they crossed the 50-yard line twice.
Blocked a field goal.
Yeah. And, you know, got 8 false start penalties against Florida, which is a credit to their crowd and a slight at Florida's discipline, I guess. But,
I think it was
a huge game. I wasn't saying that I thought LSU would win huge. I'm just saying this is monumental, I think, for the direction of LSU's season. They really need to win. And Kentucky, obviously, at least in record, is going to be first in line to challenge Georgia. But I have a hard time.
They scored 20 with a blocked field goal return for a touchdown. I think they scored 16 against South Carolina.
Yeah, 211 yards against Florida.
But
to their credit, they're winning.
They won. I was watching that game, Reese. Literally, they're down by 10. Florida was down by 10. 8 minutes left. I literally go, how can Kentucky screw this up? Because we know it's going to happen. Like, I've seen the movie. I know the ending. But I don't know how we're going to get to that conclusion. But Kentucky's going to find a way to be Kentucky and give this away. And then they didn't. They hang in there. So kudos to Kentucky for sure.
Okay. When we get to the state fair on Saturday for College Game Day leading into Texas, Oklahoma, what state fair delicacy would you be most likely to eat? Corny dog, fried Oreo or something like that? What would you be most tempted to eat? If you weren't so disciplined in your diet, what would be the thing that you'd love to just go face first into and mash fried Oreos or a bunch of corny dogs? Or what would you eat face first? What would you like to go right in there and just like?
My wife was listening, so I was curious to get her take on what she thought it would be that I would want to dive headfirst into. You know what? I don't care about any of the fried crap. I don't care about the corn dogs. That's not good. I like pretzels. I don't know how humans don't like pretzels. I love pretzels, so that's
one
thing.
You do like pretzels. I've seen you eat pretzels.
A big soft pretzel. Yes, right? A big soft pretzel is really good, but a funnel cake without consequences would be amazing. Yeah. If I knew that I didn't have to digest it and it wouldn't go through my system, I would destroy a funnel cake.
Oh, the funnel cake. What did you like back in the day on the funnel cakes? The powdered sugar, or did you just like them as they were? Or
oh no, you gotta have the powdered sugar. The powdered sugar was a must.
Yeah. Is there any bet we could make for this week where you would have to eat a funnel cake if I win, and I would have to eat a funnel cake if you win?
That's winning for you on both ends.
That's exactly right.
Come on now. No, absolutely not.
Come on. Let's make a bet of some type that would result in you eating a funnel cake.
I'm going to need you to tell some team or organization they suck so bad they should quit football, so the politician can't say ungood. I'm going to need more enticement on your side of that bargain before I take a bet like that.
Who would you like for me to say, inhales briskly at football, so that you would eat it.
You use that today.
How about this? UConn, you are terrible at football. Now will you eat a funnel cake?
How about UConn and Vanderbilt? Somebody had to win, right? Like somebody had to win. Congratulations, Vanderbilt. Good job.
You know what? What UConn and UMass play this week, I think.
Oh my gosh. Oh Lord.
Our news editor, Mike Allen, suggested that the loser be relegated to the Yankee Conference. Back in the old
that would be pretty solid.
What do you do the European soccer thing? I hear people talk about that and it's completely farcical.
Speaking of these two,
that would be pretty good stakes. Loser leave town match.
Speaking, I'm huge pulling for the Red Sox tonight, by the way. I've been watching the standings go back and forth. I always cheer against the Yankees. So I was trying to find a way for the Mariners and the Red Sox to get in, the Yankees not. So I can't wait till the Red Sox win tonight and ruin the Yankee season. I'm gonna take full plunge into that. I'm gonna love that.
What do you have against the Yankees?
I just don't like them. Not a fan. I've always pulled for the underdogs. I just never been a people that pay all the money out to get to, you know, enjoy all the fruits of the labor when they paid for everybody. So I prefer not them to win.
But you like the Lakers, don't you?
First of all, they have a salary cap, so they can't spend more than everybody else. But I like
there's luxury tax in baseball too.
Yeah, they just pay extra luxury tax and they keep piling on.
You have that in the NBA too. Something similar. Yeah,
to an extent, correct. Yeah. I don't love the Lakers either. I do like LeBron. Okay. I love LeBron, but anyways,
okay.
I digress.
All right. Okay. Gonna be fun. I look forward to winning this bet now that I've said that UConn's not good at football and David's gonna enjoy the funnel cake. I'll put it on Instagram or something. Just think funnel cake and then a Bo Nix carnival ride.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. What could possibly go wrong with that? Hey, David, it's been great. And we want to thank our producer, Travis, who's leaving us to pursue other ventures after this week. He's put up with us for 3 weeks. You and I have wanted to do a podcast for quite some time, and Travis helped us get things started on Tuesday. So we appreciate him.
Can Travis tell us go blue real quick before he leaves?
Travis, can you hop on here and say go blue?
Those words will never be uttered I'll never say those words.
OH.
IO.
There you go.
Travis is a huge Buckeye. In fact, Travis keeps trying to cut my mic out every time I say I believe in Michigan. But we wish you well, my friend. Thank you very much. Davey, I'll see you. See you in Dallas. Looking forward to that. It'll be fun. See you. I'll buy you a funnel cake when we get there. Thanks as always for listening, and make sure to rate, review, and follow. Also, the NHL is back, and ESPN has a new hockey podcast, In the Crease, the ESPN NHL podcast with leading experts on the sport, Hall of Fame sportscaster Linda Cohn and national NHL reporter Emily Kaplan, is every Monday and Thursday. Cohn and Kaplan will bring fans their insider perspectives, great reporting, reactions, and analysis to the latest breaking headlines and under-the-radar stories, both on and off the ice. The duo will be joined regularly by ESPN's lineup of NHL voices, including NHL stars and legends of the game. That's the In the Crease podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcast. And we thank you for listening to ours, and we'll see you next week.